I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off, and when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
K-Row. I've been there. K-Row.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life, and we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome back to another episode of the Hashtag MoLedge podcast. You're here with Rachel Herndon Dunn, editor of the Missouri Times, my lovely co-host Becky Lohman of the Catalyst Group, and my MoTime sidekick, Ben Peters. Today, brought to you by the... that offended him.
I am not really digging the sidekick.
He doesn't want to be my sidekick, everybody.
No one wants to be the sidekick. Well, like, no one.
I'll work on this.
I like this, like, separate but equal kind of thing here. But, you know, the power is with both, kind of.
Right, like your
mentality.
Yeah.
The one
interesting.
Powers.
Noted. Over here. We love honesty on the podcast, so I appreciate Ben weighing in.
Anyway, so today, brought to you by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce, we have the first of two special episodes about the November 7th special elections. So first things first, we have five subjects we want to talk about. Our guest today is House Operative Campaign Hare, Wes Sutton. Welcome to the Hashtag MoLedge podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
No,
excited to be here.
Are you okay with that introduction?
I worked on that a lot.
House Operative Campaign Hare.
Campaign Hare.
Campaign Hare.
Hare. It's
the hare.
Title case.
Yeah.
I'm good with it.
I think there could be some awards distributed for best hair, and Wes, you know, has a fighting chance at the top.
Wes is
spot.
Up there.
And I work with Alex Eaton, and he listens loyally, so I'm probably going to be in big trouble for saying that, but, you know.
It used to be we always gave the best hair to Joe Lakin, who's going to be our guest tomorrow, but he's not here right now.
So, it's Wes.
So, it's Wes. I mean,
you have me on first to really kind
right.
of
yeah.
show
right.
how this goes, and then Joe can kind of learn from there.
Supplement. Yeah, exactly.
So there's one big policy thing that kind of broke this week worth talking about, other than all the special elections. Senator Bill Eigel, he's out of St. Charles, is proposing a new tax plan. It's called MARA. It stands for something. But he is planning to increase the gas tax, which is a use tax. He wants to remove the bottom four tax brackets, and he wants to lower the income tax rate for small business owners, which may be in another tax bracket to begin with. So that's big.
That's huge. And I mean, from what I've heard, it's a 300 plus page bill,
sure.
Which is no small undertaking. And anytime someone goes after a tough, complicated, nuanced issue, brings the millions of stakeholders that care about tax reform, which is literally everybody cares about taxes in some capacity, and to come up with a bill that that Senator Eigel did and Jacob Scott in his office did is just really impressive and admirable. And I think that you have to give kudos for just the simple undertaking of such an issue of that magnitude, and something that's going to take a lot of time. That's going to get some pushback, and it's a heavy lift. So I give their office major kudos for addressing something that's probably need to be addressed for some time now.
Two things on that. This will be Senator Eigel's second year in the Senate. This will be Senator Eigel's second huge proposal. Last year, before he even hit the Senate, he had a major transportation proposal regarding I-70.
Mm-hmm.
Another point is this is a lot of times people like to talk about how it takes multiple sessions for a bill to pass. A lot of the concepts in this bill are not new to the Senate. There's been several senators talking about increasing the gas tax. So I kind of wonder, Wes, what the House might think of raising the gas tax. We've got some new members.
I mean, raising the gas tax has always been a tough proposal in the House, especially by itself. We've seen in the past few years, anything that's even been considered through the Senate has been kind of dead on arrival when it's gotten over to our side. But the interesting thing is wanting to make a full tax reform like Senator Eigel's proposing is much more interesting. I think it's something that you would actually see a lot of our more conservative members of the House have a lot of interest in. And quite frankly, it goes hand in hand a lot with the issues that Senator Eigel's been wanting to work on with transportation funding. All of this together makes up just a huge... whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's one big giant problem for our state that he's wanting to solve, and with many different facets. And so I'm excited to, I haven't dug down in it too much, but I'm excited to look into it some more. And I know there's a lot of people in the House who are excited as well. And I think we can probably get some things moving on it and see where we want to go. But I mean, it's awesome what he's wanting to take the bull by the horns with all of this and put it together, because it's fascinating stuff.
So I think going off of the gas tax is kind of a standalone piece versus in a comprehensive bill, I think Wes is absolutely right, is when you're looking at it as it's standalone. So for example, Boone County and the City of Columbia just voted on a use tax for pretty much an internet sales tax, right?
Right.
And color me surprised when my blue municipality voted down this tax increase, and we usually love tax increases in Columbia, so... but because, you know, I am actually supportive of the streamlined sales and use tax agreement, because if you look at it comprehensively and say, we're not just raising the tax of out-of-state companies, let's decrease the tax for everybody and make it even, I think that makes it much more palatable, and I think a lot of people agree with that. So going to the gas tax to say, maybe we're going to raise it a bit, but when we take a step back and look at the whole landscape, I think people are much more open to that conversation.
I think it's kind of interesting. I saw a funny tweet yesterday from someone who will not be named, but I'm sure listens, who lives in Columbia, and said he voted so hard his pencil went through the paper. That's how...
I mean, you don't see a lot of tax decreases go down in Columbia, and, you know, I think the city council should pay attention to that. That I think maybe Columbians have had enough with the tax increases and maybe need a little bit more of better managing the money we give them.
That'd be amazing.
I know it's a crazy concept, but just throwing it out there, should any city council members be listening to this podcast?
I've never thought efficient government was a good idea until now. Thank you for bringing that up.
Maybe they just need to hear my voice weigh in, and I'm changing hearts and minds on this podcast every day.
Becky Lim in 2018. Right. Last point on Igel's tax proposal. It's kind of interesting. Schmidt had a huge tax bill a few years ago. It seems like, obviously, the budget comes out of the House, but it seems like these tax plans come out of the Senate. And I wonder if that's going to be a continuing trend. Anyway, this is Rachel Dunn. We're here with Wes Sutton today. And, of course, Becky is here, Ben is here, and Mike is listening in the corner. Our next thing we wanted to talk about, something that happened this week, was also yesterday regarding an election. Virginia's next governor is going to be a Democrat. Yeah. And it's Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam. He won. He was up against Ed Gillespie. It was kind of interesting. The Lieutenant Governor his campaign also had the same communications guy that did Coster's communications. Very popular in Missouri. Obviously, close connection there. But the real trend, I would say, is a lot of people are looking at Missouri as whether it's still a bellwether, whether it's still competitive for Democrats. And Virginia has a kind of similar climate in some places, mm-hmm. and they go and elect a Democrat a year after Trump is elected.
Yeah, Wes, I mean, what sort of, you talk about boots on the ground for Senator Sierra Poy's race. What sort of implications do you think that has, if any, for Missouri? Are there any commonalities to be drawn?
So Virginia's kind of moving in the opposite direction of Missouri. It's been moving and becoming a Democrat state since the George W. Bush years. I mean, I think he won it in 2000 fairly easily, and since then it's just constantly moved towards the Democrats. You have a lot of that government worker sort of group out of D.C. that lives in Northern Virginia and does all that. So it was interesting to see it happen that Northam won, and he kind of won a little bit bigger than I think most folks were expecting. But if you go back, Hillary Clinton won that state by 5 points this past election. Donald Trump won Missouri by 19 points, and we're becoming more red over time.
Did you think the Democrat was going to win all along?
I thought Northam had the edge throughout. I thought there was maybe a shot that Gillespie could come through in the end, but it seemed like, especially with the way it trended the last few days, Gillespie probably needed that election to happen about a week sooner than it did. Democrats closed strong, did a nice job there, but... it was just that's sort of the way these races can go sometimes.
I think it's kind of interesting. On October 5th, the president did tweet his support of Ed Gillespie. And then yesterday, President Trump tweeted, "Ed Gillespie worked hard, but he did not embrace me or what I stand for. Don't forget, Republicans won 4 out of 4 House seats. And with the economy doing record numbers, we will continue to win even bigger than before!" Exclamation point.
That sounds like 280 characters. Do you think that it sounded? Maybe you just reading it.
Oh no!
It. Everyone has 280 characters now. Buckle up, guys.
So it was that it was retweeted by Ed Martin, former chief of staff to Matt Blunt, current CNN analyst or correspondent,
and perhaps Senate candidate, Missouri is Senate. I don't know. I don't know that there's anything official, but certainly his name has been discussed in private conversations.
Anyway, he retweeted the president saying the lesson yet again is to run to Trump, not from Trump. Period. Or lose. Period.
And do you really think anybody's running from Trump very much in Missouri? I mean, Trump, or do they need to? Trump is still has a high approval rating here.
He's got, you know, his approval rating's still doing well. I mean, I don't know that anybody's running from him, running to him, running around him, or anything. I mean, each race is different, and if you go to, like, we had multiple races yesterday here in Missouri. You had the Searport race, which was in suburban Jackson County, kind of a, you know, offshoot of Kansas City. You've got a different sort of voter electorate there from the race that was in the Boot Heel
represent
for Herman Morse yesterday, who just won huge. Trump's still huge in rural places. He's going to be. I mean, he's extremely popular there. But even in suburban places, it kind of depends on your what part you're in. He's still doing pretty well in some of them. He's struggling in others. So to say that Republicans should run to him or run away from him or anything else is really, you're getting way too much into the national stuff whenever you've got so many other facets that go into a race.
I will say, I think it's interesting how Trump is a very aggressive politician, and it seems like there's a new level of aggression for some politicos whenever it comes to Trump on how people should orient themselves to the president. Mm-hmm. Anyway, number three, into special elections, Herman Morse is elected to HD 151, replacing Tyler Hubrick, who resigned right after the first special session. You met Herman, right?
I have.
Wes?
Yep.
So tell us about the new guy.
Herman is great guy, retired school teacher, minister, done a lot of agriculture in his background as well. I mean, he's a perfect candidate and a perfect representative for that district down in Stoddard and parts of Scott County. Worked that hard, did a lot of your doors, a lot of phones very quickly, and I thought he ran a very good race, and I think he's going to do a great job in the legislature. With fitting that district, he's going to focus on those issues that he knows that they care about down there, and I'm excited for him. He's run for school board a few times and won every time, but he's kind of new to some of this stuff, so it's kind of neat to see someone who's really learning this on the fly, especially someone who's retired and hasn't had to do some of this stuff before, so I'm excited.
I thought it was interesting watching this race because Morse was outspent 2-1, but he got votes 2-1 over the Democrat.
That's a Republican district.
It's a very Republican district. If you if you remember Tyler Hubrick, you'll probably know how Republican this district is. Number four, Barbara Washington was elected to HD 23, replacing Randy Dunn, who also resigned. She went from having a less than active campaign to a very active campaign very quickly and pulled in, I believe last night I was looking at KNBC, the ticker at the bottom of the screen, it said like 80% of the vote. It's a very Democratic district.
No, the final tally was 89.
89%.
And I feel like I would have predicted in the 90s almost, right, for that district. Right.
Wow.
Like, it's very historically blue, and it definitely proved that again last night.
Like, and you know, she raised some money in the last report, but she didn't really need to spend any of it. Like, that's a blue district. It's going to, I would expect it to stay a blue district.
And I think that'll be, you know, an implication of what we see in Virginia is much more critical thinking about how we spend money, right? Mm-hmm. Winning a seat by 20 points isn't necessary when you can use some of that money and, you know, edge out a victory in a more moderate district. So
exactly.
I think that will be the first thing we see is more thoughtful spending and more critical analysis of that polling.
Mm-hmm.
And number five, and obviously the subject of the rest of this podcast, we're here with Wes Sutton. He was on the ground out in SD8, which is Eastern Jackson County, my home district, a little territorial of it. House Majority Floor Leader Mike Searpoy was elected to SD8. And I will say, at least I'm at where he's from, where I'm from, he's very popular.
Oh,
people
yeah.
love him. My mother has Bible verses written on Mike Searpoy post-it notes all over our house.
Mm-hmm.
No lie, I'm not joking. I couldn't make that up if I tried. Searpoy's a name that's been around in Eastern Jackson County for a long time. Both him and his wife, Connie, are very smart politicians. They know how to spend their money right. They know how to raise the money.
That they do.
And obviously, that paid off last night.
Absolutely. And what makes me even more excited is not only did he win, but in a three-way race like that, where Jacob Turk was really kind of playing the spoiler role, he still got more than 50% of the vote. And even with that being a Republican district, with it being a three-way race, that's a huge deal. That tells you that he has a mandate from that district that not only do they want him to be the state senator, but they really put that stamp on it that he's the guy. It's not just a Republican. It's Mike Searboy. And that's a huge deal for in my opinion.
And so speaking from the Democratic standpoint, it looks like, at face value, the Democrats really wanted Turk to get in the race, obviously to split the Republican vote, right?
Absolutely.
What was the most surprising thing that happened on the campaign trail?
I'm not sure that there were many surprises after Turk got on the ballot. Most everything went according to form, really. I was a little surprised that the Democrats did not put a little more effort behind building a positive message for Hillary Shields. In a three-way race, a special election like that, you not only need people to want to go vote for a person or against another person, but it's a three-way race. You want them to come vote for your candidate. And I was a little bit surprised. I know that they raised $130,000, $140,000 somewhere for Hillary. So it's not like they didn't have the money. They could have done that had they chosen to, but instead they put a lot of their focus into putting Mike out there as a negative and trying to work around where they could to make it seem like Jacob was someone that should get more votes. I mean, they put more effort into Jacob Turk than they put more money into helping Jacob Turk than Jacob Turk did from his own campaign.
I looked at the last report and Turk had spent zero money, and the report dropped the same day that Hillary Shields, the Democratic candidate in this race, sent out a mailer that had Jacob Turk's face like right on it. Mm-hmm. He didn't need to spend money because the Democrats were doing it for him.
Exactly. And I knew or had a good idea that they were going to go for some of those Jacob Turk is too conservative for Missouri sort of things and send them to Republican voters like they did. And so I was really happy that we were prepared for it. Brett Dinkins did just a phenomenal job as campaign manager on this. The folks at Victory and Axiom both, who had a lot of help in this, did a great job. And what was nice about it was you had so much grassroots support for Mike because Turk got on the ballot that I'm not sure you would have seen otherwise. You had just about the entirety of the Jackson County Republican Committee out there for Mike and wanting to help him. You had folks coming from Clay County, coming from all parts of the state. I mean, you had so many legislators come up. Andrew McDaniel drove all the way up from the Boot Heel to the other end of the state to help.
That's energy. Isn't for
like
a Canada.
Isn't that like an 8-hour drive?
Oh, it's about Canada. 6 hours from Sykeston, so it's probably seven or so. For
oh, yeah, you're from Sykeston. Mm-hmm. So I love throw rolls.
You got it.
Violent carbs.
And the Sykeston Rodeo, of course. But
right.
But it was really just, the whole time, it was awesome to see that sort of energy, and it made me feel like we were moving in the right direction. You kind of saw, as polling went on, the message for Mike was getting out there. And it was people were excited to go vote for Mike, and then also letting them know about the collaboration between the Democrats and Jacob Turk, whether Turk wanted it or not, the collaboration was there. I mean, people really responded to that, and they responded to, these Democrats are trying to split this vote. We're not going to let it happen. I mean, that was the biggest reason this campaign was a success, is you had grassroots on the ground support like you don't see in very many state senate races.
I thought it was interesting. Last week, the Searboy campaign dropped an ad talking about law enforcement that, mm-hmm. from the media standpoint, it looked like it was something that would stick as an attack. The Democrats responded very negatively to Searboy's ad, which mm-hmm. highlighted Ferguson and the Stockley verdict and those protests. The ad highlighted that and said, you know, this isn't a good thing, but Searboy's going to support law enforcement.
Exactly.
And Democrats attacked him and said, like, hey, no, this is a racist ad. But just 3 days ago, the St. Louis Police Officers Association endorsed Searboy across mm-hmm. the state, said, yes, this is the message we need. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
I mean, law enforcement across the state was behind Mike in that race and really wanted to see him win because, I mean, our police officers deserve all the help that they can get to do their job to the best of their ability. That's something that's important to people, not just police officers, that's important to people across the state. If you go sit down with someone in Lee's Summit, you go sit down with someone in St. Louis, St. Charles, Columbia, Sykeston, I mean, you go to, you know, any sort of corner of the state, you go to Kirksville, anywhere, people want to support their police officers. That's not an uncommon stance. That's something that they believe in. And we side with them. That's the thing. Republicans always will. And that's a big deal to us, and it was clearly a big deal to the voters.
Absolutely. We're here with Wes Sutton, who did work over in SD8, which is Eastern Jackson County. Mike Searpoy won the special election last night. You were at the campaign headquarters yesterday. You were at the election party last night. Mm-hmm. It was packed. Absolutely packed.
I mean, it's the same thing. It was packed all day. We had people who were out on door. We didn't know that they were doing poll working in the morning that would come in and say, yeah, we've been at the poll for 3 hours just supporting Mike, and now we want to come in here and kind of help do phones or whatever. And we had our list of people we thought were coming in, and then it was double the people just showing up. I mean, we probably had throughout the day at least 60 people that were either out knocking on doors, reminding people to go vote, doing phone banking for us, all kinds of things.
That's amazing. Not only as a special election in and off here, but just for a state senate race. Like, you're rarely mm-hmm. going to see that on a federal level.
Exactly.
Let alone a local race.
It's why we felt good near the end, is because every single day you had people that wanted to come. It wasn't that we badgered them into coming or anything like that. They called us and said, hey, what do you need today? What do you need this weekend? What can we do to go help out? You had folks who were making dinner for Mike and Brett Dinkins and Phil Yates and all that group every night so that they would be able to get working through eight and all that.
As a native of Lee Summit, how was their cooking?
Very good.
Yeah.
It was delicious.
Yeah.
And thank you to them for it.
You know, that's absolutely amazing. Any last impressions? What can the Republican Party learn from the Searpoy campaign?
I mean, I think we learned that in Missouri, the Republican Party is still strong, and our message is the one that resonates with Missouri voters. You look at what this election, the Sarah Walsh race back in August, Herman Morse's race, what these all did. I mean, clearly Trump's still popular here. Clearly the message is still there that, I mean, it hasn't changed all that much. We haven't seen that Trump deflation that you've seen in other parts of the country, mainly the coasts. And it'll be interesting to watch. I think it puts us in a good spot to have people ready to go for House District 144 coming up in February, House District 97. Those are going to be interesting races, but I think you would put the Republican as the favorite if they do all the right things in both of those. And then, obviously, also you've got Joe Don McGaw's seat and Sandy Crawford's seat, which will both also be filled at the same time. And it makes me breathe a little easier on all of those.
I think it's interesting. So my husband is originally from House District 144,
mm-hmm.
and it is very different from SD8.
Yes, it is.
I remember whenever I used to work campaigns, knocking any of the suburban Kansas City districts was terrible because it's a ton of split levels. Out in 144, you have a house every quarter mile
exactly.
with maybe a 1 to 100 acre farm, and it's hilly. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where it's the bottom of the mountains, and
exactly. I mean,
it's rough terrain. I mean, I'd take a split level over Iron County probably any day.
Well, but the thing is, you've got Chris Dinkins out there who knows that area well. She's grown up there. She knows the people there, and so she's gonna have people ready to go to knock those. The first race I ever did being paid was Holly Rader's first state representative race in 2012. And if you go north of Benton, Missouri, it's all hills up in there. You're going up into New Hamburg and Kelso and Scott City and all that. It's the same thing. You're looking at the list, you drive through it, and you look and you say, you think it's that house way down that way or the one way down over here? And you just go for it, because the folks, when you go to see them at those doors, they're the ones who are excited to go vote for you, because you're the person who's driving out there to go see them, talk to them, find out their issues. So I think for someone like Chris Dinkins, she knows that district, she knows the people there, and she's going to go work it. She's done that with HRCC in past cycles, and so she is not scared of hard work to get that done. So I'm excited to see what she can do in that race.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about so there are more special elections in February, because there's been several seats vacated. There's been a lot of appointments. When talking about what the Democrats learned from SD8 and maybe how they can possibly apply that to SD8. I thought it was interesting what Hillary Shields, the Democratic candidate in SD8, tweeted last night. "We ran an amazing campaign in 3 months. I'm so grateful to everyone who volunteered, donated, and voted. We ran a strong, progressive campaign in a district that we hadn't seen a Dem in over a decade. We made Repubs spend $1 million on what they thought was a safe seat. To me, that's a win. I'm very curious what you think Democrats might have learned from this, because in no way, shape, or form would Jim Skaggs ever tweet that.
No, exactly.
The words progressive are not going to be uttered in Iron County, Potosi.
If you want to put a win in your win column after a loss, then that's the way to do it. I mean, I get making people unload their war chest makes sense, but Dems also spent money in a seat that they lost. Right? So you have to look at it from two ways. How much money are Dems going to pump into seats to say, well, we gave it a go and we still don't have the seat? So, you know, I think that is, it can work a little bit, but it can't be the whole message of let's just make Republicans spend all their money and still lose our seat.
Right. I mean, if you're going to say, if your big win is, ha, we made them work hard, I'm never going to be upset with working hard. The folks who do the stuff we do are never going to be upset with working hard. That's something we're happy to do. We're excited to do. It makes it fun. She still got 42% of the vote. We got 57% between Mike and Jacob Turk. So clearly this is still a Republican district. We weren't fighting Hillary Shields. We were fighting Jacob Turk taking away too much of the vote. That was the race there. And they knew it too. Otherwise, they would have put more time and effort into making this about a positive of Hillary Shields and not about trying to steal votes.
I think it's interesting for 144. Jim Skaggs, who's the Iron County Commissioner and the Democratic nominee for 144, is probably not going to tell any of those voters that he's a progressive Democrat.
I would hope not.
And so I kind of wonder...
I hope he does, but...
Whenever you go out into eastern Jackson County, it's a pretty conservative area. For a candidate to say, we ran a progressive campaign, it's pretty bold in my book. Like, progressive is not a word we say at Thanksgiving in SD8.
No.
In a good way.
Yeah. Right. And, but it was definitely a very interesting campaign to watch. I'm very glad that series of special elections is over.
You and me both.
Are you excited for the next batch?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
You're going to catch up on sleep before.
I may not. I may just go down there and start helping out right away.
I remember my first batch of campaigns, and it's someone that we all know. I remember thinking, like, when do these people sleep? Because I was a full-time student. I was doing full-time campaigns. And I finally just asked for advice, and they're like, you know, we'll sleep when we're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, the advice is figure it out.
I've got plenty of time to sleep later on, but this is fun to do now. I mean,
it's no surprise whenever campaign workers drink literally a case of Diet Coke every
week. No one in Jeff City, like, requires a lot of sleep.
Not really.
You just can't. It's probably the first box you check. You want to be in politics? How much sleep do you need?
I mean, in a lot of ways, campaigns are like improv. You just always say yes. So yep. I mean, if you need help with something, go do it.
And you just, it's like you have to keep going.
Yeah.
And well, you just, I mean, as long as you don't stop, you won't go to sleep.
If I'm not going to do it, I have to find other people who are going to go do it, so why don't I just go do it? It'll be fun. I'm going to enjoy it. So if it's fun, do it.
Absolutely. We are here with Wes Sutton on the Hashtag Middle Edge podcast, and it is time for 5 questions.
For 5 questions. So I just realized I must be hungry, because a lot of these are food-related.
Oh, good.
So first question. What is your favorite cookie?
Oh, geez.
I have strong opinions on cookies, so
we'll see,
because
I mean, there were some delicious chocolate chip cookies last night.
Were they made by residents of SD8?
I would think so, considering we were in Lee's Summit for the watch party. So I absolutely love a chocolate chip cookie as much as anything. I mean, they are delicious.
That is a classic political American answer.
Perfect. Well, it's also the correct
answer. How do you feel about snickerdoodles as a cookie?
Snickerdoodles are delicious cookies as well.
So I have a very big problem with snickerdoodles.
You don't like them?
I don't understand why anybody likes them.
I mean, aren't they just basically sugar cookies?
Right. Right.
Rolled in cinnamon sugar?
Right. Yeah. I mean, exactly. Like, give me a smidge more effort.
You're saying
into your
this like it's
making.
A bad thing, though.
Right. I am. Just like jump some chocolate chips in. It's like one more step.
And, you know,
great
a lot
cookie.
Of times they taste stale.
Snickerdoodles?
The worst cookie is a stale cookie.
Turning hearts and minds. Everybody on this podcast right now is like, as a matter of fact, snickerdoodles aren't that great. Second question. What's your favorite part of your job? I feel like you wear so many different hats. What is your favorite hat to wear?
He has to pick a hat.
I don't really wear that many hats. When you have hair this good, why are you...
I said you were for that one.
I swear I'm not that vain normally. I mean, I love
only when it's on the record in public, right?
Exactly. I have a persona to maintain. I mean, the camaraderie is the best part. When I came into this, it was in 2014, was when I really got going. I had gotten out of college and did some work for HRCC and met nobody before I got on. They were just desperate for someone to be in the boot heel, and I happened to be in the boot heel at the time. So it was a really thankless job. Not thankless. I really enjoyed it, working with Don Ronan.
Wasn't a glamorous job.
No, exactly. Yeah. But being able to come up here afterwards, I've made so many friends, so many people who I'm especially close to now. And being able to have this group where we all dork out about the same stupid stuff that nobody else cares about, where we'll sit here just like a conversation like this, except for it be an hour and a half, and just talk about the random little intricacies of SDA or in the building, you know, the strategy around how do we get education reform done in the house or anything like that. I mean, it's just fun. It's absolutely the line of work that I want to be in, and so it works great.
I think it's interesting looking around at the Capitol. A lot of the closest bonds you will find are people who worked on campaigns together.
Oh, yeah.
Even Becky's guys, she's got Porter and Eaton,
both worked for Talent. Porter, Eaton, and Pfeiffer all work for Talent, and yeah. I'm like the odd woman out.
and you they can't talk even about break talent. Into that.
No, it's like a fraternity or sorority, to be quite honest. It's this little freakish bond that I can't possibly understand, and I try to jump in double dutch and have something relevant to say, but I've learned to just let them go.
And it's the perk of working for a group like HRCC, because that's every single cycle. We're all going through that same crap, and we just have these group texts where we are just roasting each other the entire time, and it's awesome.
My whole day, it's funny, I'm sure everybody's day is like this, is my whole day has been calling people and been like, what do you think? You know, just talking through things for the sake of talking through them.
Right.
And I don't know any other people that come home from accounting job, no offense to accounting, my sister's an accountant, but are like, hey man, those spreadsheets last night, wow. Let's rehash all of that. So yeah, I think everybody in politics loves what they do, and that tells. So this is one of my favorite questions, a polarizing question of our time. Pepsi or Coke?
Dr. Pepper.
Hey,
I don't drink either Pepsi or Coke.
Really?
I'm not saying you're pregnant, but since I was pregnant, I have been obsessed with Diet Coke. Like, I don't, and no offense to moms, and I don't think you're a mom either, Wes Sutton.
Not that I know of.
But all the moms I know that are my age are obsessed with Dr. Pepper.
Interesting.
Like, multiple liters a
Dr.
week.
Dr. Pepper, yeah. But Dr. Pepper, yes, Diet Dr. Pepper.
Oh, no, I stay away from the diet
stuff.
I'm
with you.
I mean,
so,
if you're going to drink something, it needs to have flavor to it. I mean, that's part of the deal.
There you go. Just threw back a lot of Dr. Peppers late night, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, question number four. You kind of alluded to this earlier. When you were little Wes Sutton with a full head of hair in the first grade.
Mm-hmm. I imagine you were born with that head of hair.
Alex Eaton, Joe, everybody with a full head of hair, like that's how, what your hair looked like when you were one.
Well, funny thing. So when I was really little, it was when I was in kindergarten, first grade, around there, I actually had a buzz cut for a little bit because it's the little kid make your hair just buzz so that you didn't have to do that.
This
much
probably better. Was a lot of effort for your parents.
Exactly. So I grew. I mean, it grew back out fourth.
Fantastically, apparently. Yeah.
I mean, it did okay. But so, what's the question?
We even went off on a tangent about Wes's hair. That's the next podcast. What did you want to be when you grew up?
So,
what was it? Yeah.
For a long time, I thought I wanted to go into the journalism field, more on the sports side. But I always had kind of this joy of politics as well. Like, I was 8 years old when the 2000 election happened. I didn't really fully understand it, but I stayed up till like 2:30 in the morning watching it because I just thought it was fascinating. And so, yeah, it was sports journalism for a long time. I was even accepted to Mizzou to go to journalism school. And near the end of high school, I just realized that politics really was what I cared about, and also Ole Miss was what I really cared about. So switched gears, went to Ole Miss, got a degree in political science, all that fun stuff, and here I am.
Here he is.
Last question. Favorite food at Thanksgiving dinner?
Oh, you are asking the wrong person this question.
So word on the street is that you don't have a food pyramid. You have a food square, and it's all crap.
Yes, exactly. So, I don't eat good food. I'm not a good person.
Wes Sutton.
Never have.
The
I
thing
don't
about
eat meat.
Even campaign.
Don't you really don't eat any meat?
No, I don't really like many vegetables. Like, it is all just awful. I mean, trust me, it's weird. I know. I see your face right now, Becky.
No meat, so like a cheeseburger, not into it.
Your face is going through about my seven different stages of things right now. I normally have a big thing of mac and cheese as part of Thanksgiving. Yep.
You know, mac and cheese.
Please continue.
You like
it's my favorite food.
You don't even eat turkey. Not even gravy.
Nope.
Not even.
Wes.
About food, I thought that was the funniest thing ever when you mentioned the five questions being.
Yeah.
You're a poor
like, he's from Sykeston. They literally throw rolls.
Do they even let you come to Thanksgiving?
Normally they just.
Oh, that's so tragic. You just made me sad.
You know, it is interesting, Wes, especially because you're all up and one day realize they need to eat vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not looking at myself right.
Eating junk food and
junk food grazing all day.
Twinkies and Dr. Pepper, man.
I mean, you're on adrenaline all day, so I'm drinking nothing but bottled water and, you know, munching on maybe.
A bonus question from your fellow mac and cheese lover.
Uh-huh.
What restaurant has your favorite mac and cheese?
Oh, it should be a more popular side of restaurants.
It's pretty easy.
If you get
that was a disappointing answer. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the hashtag Middle Edge.
We peaked in the middle.
We should have gone down the hair conversation.
We should have done about four questions.
Clearly,
Wes is not as passionate about macaroni and cheese as I am.
There's a reason they pay me to do politics.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the hashtag Middle Edge podcast. We're here today with Wes Sutton. He's a house op, he's a campaign op.
Hates good food,
likes to brush his hair and drink Dr. Pepper. We're talking the SDA election, and we will be talking about the SDA election tomorrow, too. We'll have Joe Lakin on the podcast, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for listening. Station.